Hello and welcome to In Your Nature podcast. I'm Ricky Whelan.
And I'm Niall Hatch. And just to begin by saying that In Your Nature is edited by Anne-Marie Kelly. And the series is supported by Laois Offaly and Westmeath County Councils and the Heritage Council.
So today we want to talk about an absolutely fabulous, flamboyant, charismatic raptor. And in its own right, it's just a really, really cool species. And it's the hen harrier.
Yeah, that's right. We touched on them a little bit in our episode about the bogs recently. And we figured it really deserves an episode in its own right, because it's, for me, one of the most beautiful and charismatic species that we have in Ireland. It's a species that's under pressure. The population isn't doing as well as it once did in Ireland. So it's something we have a lot of responsibility to try and rectify. And this would be a species it would be a crying shame to lose from Ireland, because it's just such a beautiful and evocative species.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you say, like, oh, you're talking about losing it from Ireland. Like, but we are in that space with them.
We are.
And only, a number of years ago, there was a hen harrier threat response plan sort of, put together. And it hasn't really turned the tide. So there's a lot more to be done. But look, there's so many threats. I mean, we've mentioned them in a couple of podcasts, including a recent bog one. But you know, we've got forestry policy is encroaching on their habitats, drainage bog sort of over the years of, again, habitat damage, habitat loss through peatland harvesting and peat harvesting, you know, intensive farm practice, pollution, climate change. It's just all eating away at them.
It is. It's many things at once. You know, maybe they could bear one or two of those things in isolation. When you have all this ranging against them, it really is tough for them. And the part of the reason for that is that they're quite specialised in their habitat. They like open moorland, heathland, upland areas, particularly in the breeding season. So they like this kind of unbroken open habitat. When you start getting like trees, plantation blocks in there, or even things like wind farms, it causes disturbance, certainly breaks up that habitat, the big areas they need, makes it harder for them to find food. But also, because they predominantly nest on the ground, it's providing perches and cover for predators to sneak up on them and to get the eggs and chicks that wouldn't have happened in the past. So all of the things hitting them at once, it does put them in a difficult situation. And we're seeing that not just in Ireland, but in other places in Europe too. I mean, in Britain, particularly in England, the situation is actually worse even than it is here in Ireland. One of the actual standouts for hen harrier conservation at a European level is actually the Isle of Man. The Isle of Man has loads of hen harriers. They're doing quite well there. But here in Ireland and also in Britain, not so much.
Yeah, no, it's really tricky. And I mean, over in the UK again, I mean, they intensively manage the moors for red grouse shooting, and they're actively targeting sort of hen harriers because they're predators of red grouse occasionally, and they just want them on that habitat because they see them as predators to their quarry.
Yeah, I think it's very telling that if you look at the Isle of Man, I don't have the up-to-date figures, but there's I think it's between 25 and 30 pairs of hen harriers nesting in the Isle of Man. In recent years, in all of England, there's been one pair. So it tells you that something is going on there. That's not a natural situation. And unfortunately, a lot of it is illegal persecution by gamekeepers on these heather moors that are managed for red grouse, which thankfully isn't so much one of the problems that they have to face here in Ireland.
I mean, here it's more crows, it's more habitat fragmentation, it's disturbance, it's all sorts of things. And it's, again, there's no silver bullet for it. So it has to be a whole sort of a multifaceted response and sort of throw all the conservation tools out of the toolbox at it. And unfortunately, that hasn't been seen. And there's probably, we've been throwing a lot at corncrake, we're starting to throw a good bit at curlew now, but hen harriers need to be included in that sort of that crisis management sort of space.
They do, because it's an emergency situation. And I think that it's a bird that people will have perhaps heard of by name at least. It's a bird that sometimes has been seen even as an obstacle to development, or that designation of lands for hen harriers will cause problems for landowners. And I think that, you know, there needs to be more focus on really on what this bird brings to the table, because obviously it's an indicator species. It's an apex predator that tells us about the health of that overall environment. You know, if hen harriers are disappearing from an area, it's not solely because they themselves are under pressure. The prey that they feed on is under pressure. They're struggling as well. But also, I think that just because they are so beautiful, an absolutely stunning bird. Do you remember, Ricky, what was the first time you saw a hen harrier? What sort of impression did it make on you?
I mean, like, first of all, I couldn't believe how such a big raptor was so, like, I would, like, dainty in its flight. Effortless.
Yes.
And it just floated, and it was amazing. It was a male bird as well, which are just so handsome, and just take you back. And I remember then my second was, like, it was you know the way when something ruins you because you get too good at experience and then nothing ever compares again?
Yeah.
I seen seven going into roost, two males and five females, or five female type ringtails in a local bog. And I was like, this is it. I've made it like this. Like, you know, and I've never replicated that experience since in terms of in hen harrier. So like, I'm very, very lucky to be in that sort of, you know, zone of hen harrier sort of life in Ireland, in the Midlands and in Offaly and on the bogs there. And yeah, so I mean, this, what about yourself? I mean, is it similar?
I remember once being down in Wexford, down at the Slobs, which is where hen harriers can go for the winter. And it was back in the days when you could actually drive out along the back of the slob lands. It's more restricted now, and you go out there to see the geese. And I remember being down there in the car, and it was with my dad. And I remember this bird suddenly just came over the hedge and just flew in front of the car, and then went to the field. It was a male hen harrier, and it was just so gorgeous. And then we drove past, it went to the field beside, and was kept level with the car window as we went along. And you can see it just flying. They fly so slowly. It's actually amazing they can fly so slowly over the ground, so methodical, you know, scanning the ground below with this almost owl-like face that they have. And just the crispness of it, that amazing blue-grey they have with the jet black wingtips. It's just such a handsome creature. And it didn't even seem to pay any attention to us. It was so intent on trying to find food, it was just flying by the window. And you just, one of those moments you never forget.
No, it's amazing. They're just stunning. The whole family is stunning. And actually, I'm going to talk about that. We're going to go over to an interview with Alan McCarthy, who has done a lot of research on hen harriers. And we'll get into the nitty-gritty on hen harriers there. But there's a couple of other species in that family I want to trash out with you first, and that show up in Ireland occasionally. And then at the end, after Alan's interview, we will talk about species or bird of the week. But there's two other species. There's Northern Harrier and there's Montague's Harrier. Yeah. And you might tell us a bit about those, because they're the same family as Hen Harrier, and they all kind of have this similar appearance and niche and ecology in a way.
Well, let's start with Northern Harrier there, because it's the closest relative of our Hen Harrier. For a long time, they were thought to be actually the same species. Northern Harrier, essentially, it's the North American counterpart of our Hen Harrier. They live in fairly similar habitat. They look fairly similar as well, although you can tell the differences. No, we won't get into all the nitty-gritty of how you tell them apart. The juveniles particularly look more sort of orange below. The males have a different kind of patterning on the chest, but they fill up a similar sort of niche. But the amazing thing is we're talking about this in an Irish context, because this is a species of bird of prey from North America that does occasionally turn up here in Ireland. So think about this, a bird of prey crossing the Atlantic. Most raptors don't like to cross big open bodies of water, because they tend to rely on thermals of rising warm air to allow them to soar. If you think of, even people are becoming more familiar with buzzards and with red kites and birds like that in Ireland. On a warm day, you'll often see them circling high in the sky without flapping, sometimes for minutes on end, getting higher and higher. What they're doing is they're riding these warm columns of air as high as they can, and then they'll glide down using gravity to get them to the next column of warm air. Over the sea, you don't get these rising thermals. So to think that a bird like a harrier, which, you know, is a bird that's designed for soaring and for flapping flight, that they can cross the Atlantic, that's quite remarkable. So that in itself, when they turn up here, is amazing. I remember we once had a delegation of people from different birdlife international partners from across Europe. They came to our East Coast Nature Reserve in County Wicklow. They're over for meetings, then we take them out for a field trip to see the birds. And it was a terrible day. It was rainy and blustery, and the wind was going horizontally across the fields, and we're all there. And all of a sudden, this bird just sort of came with the wind across, and it was a Northern Harrier, and it was a lifer for pretty much everybody in the group. And they went away thinking, oh my God, Ireland's fantastic for birds. They wouldn't have thought that they would see a bird like that. So that's the Northern Harrier. It's a bird, let's face it, you're very unlikely to see it. Having said that, they do sometimes hang around. I know Loughborough has had one, Tecumseh down in Wexford, another good spot to see them. So certainly one to watch out for.
Yeah, they're hangers, because when they do get here and they're still alive, they can just apply their sort of niche to our sort of pastorines, and they just go after meadow pipits like a hen harrier would or whatever, and they find them in the sort of around the sand dunes and the marshes and, you know, on the bogs. And I mean, that was a long stayer, that one in Bora and everything else. A lot of people got connected with it. The other one is from the other side of us is the Montague's Harrier.
Yeah, the Montague's Harrier, it's a migrant harrier that tends to breed mainly in southern Europe. It tends to like warmer areas. is. If you go to places like Extremadura in Spain or adjacent parts of Portugal, it's actually quite a common bird there. You can see them even nesting semi-colonially in some of the fields there, because like other harriers, they tend to nest on the ground. At first glance, it's very similar to a hen harrier. And it's worth pointing out that when it comes to the females, they really look very similar of all these European harrier species largely. However, when you look at them, they're a bit more slightly built. So they're a bit daintier in flight. And in the males, you'll see that they have the similar sort of colour pattern. They have grey bodies and wings with black wingtips, but they have a very distinctive black stripe running parallel to the edges of the wing along the top and the bottom of each wing. And that's often the way you tell them apart. There's other things. You look at the field guides, they tell you the different number of fingertip primary feathers.
Yeah,
it's so hard to spot that in the field. But if you see that black bar running across the wing, that's how you do it. And they are a bit daintier. They tend to sort of flutter lower over the ground. It's a really, really gorgeous bird. And it's actually a bird too. It comes in two colour morphs. So sometimes birds like skuas, you get that cuckoo females, they come in different colour morphs. But it's one where one of the morphs is incredibly rare, the other one's much more common. So most of the males that you'll see in somewhere like Spain, they are this grey and black. But you get some melanistic morph birds, which are essentially very, very dark chocolate brown. And they look magical. They're really special. I've only ever seen one once, but really, really special birds. And that's a bird, again, it's a very rare visitor to Ireland. But these are migrants that wander down to Africa. They go huge ranges. It's not that difficult for one to actually fly across to Ireland and turn up. And again, some to the south coast locations, places like Tecumseh, that's a place to get them. And if you're very lucky there is another species you can get that's on the Irish list, the pallid harrier, which goes there too. The pallid harrier is like a pale version of a hen harrier. It seems genetically they're relatively closely related to hen harriers and less so to the Montagu's harriers and to the marsh harrier we're talking about later. It's a bird that will occasionally turn up, and often the juveniles are quite different from the other harriers. That's how you pick them out. But it's the paleness of the adult males that you'd see. The females are a lot trickier. So that's what you're looking at there. And one of my favourite birding memories in Ireland, I remember being down at Tecumseh Lake in Wexford, which is one of those places I would think for birders, it's like a mecca for us. We know this place. I think to the general public, it's not even known. It's an incredible place for all sorts of wildlife. And it's known in the winter there is a harrier roost there. And it's a great place to see hen harrier in the winter. Marsh harrier is a species you'll regularly get there too. And we'll hear more about that a bit later on. But I remember being down there. There was a northern harrier had been seen in the area. There was a Montagu's harrier went, and then a pallid harrier. I had five harrier species flying into the same roost one evening at Tecumseh. And I don't know of anywhere else in Europe that could happen. So sometimes we can tend to do down Ireland and think that we're not so good for birds and birds of other countries. There's nowhere else to get five harrier species in one shot.
That's magical. It's unheard of. I'm glad I actually had forgot about pallid. I wanted to put that in context because people will, you often like hen harrier, you hear the word harrier and then you think they're all the one.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to sort of qualify it amongst its peers and its cousins and all that. So we'll go over to Alan now for the interview, and we'll get into a deep dive on hen harriers in Ireland.
Welcome to In Your Nature podcast, Dr. Alan McCarty. Delighted to have you here. And for the audience, to let you know, Alan is PhD in hen harrier ecology with UCC, and also is the Barn Owl Research Officer with Birdwatch Ireland. So very well qualified to speak about raptor conservation and hen harriers in Ireland. So Alan, welcome to In Your Nature. Delighted to have you.
Thanks very much for having me, Ricky. Delighted to be on and talk about hen harriers.
Yeah, indeed. And I suppose, it's good to get into the nitty gritty of the species. We've mentioned them a few times, myself and Niall, in various various episodes about bugs and bits and pieces and raptors, but we've never really got down to the business end of things, really. So tell us a little bit about hen harrier, sort of their appearance, size, ecology, and where they're found and not found, maybe, you know, and just to get people's head around it generally.
Yeah, so the hen harrier, it's one of our less common species of raptor. So not many people have seen them because they are so rare. They're a medium-sized diurnal raptor, so they hunt during the daytime, and at nighttime they'd be roosting on the ground. So they're around the size of a buzzard, which people would be a lot more familiar with, the females in particular. So the hen harrier, they're a sexually dimorphic species, so the males are smaller than the females, and their appearance as well is very different. So the females are kind of a brown overall colour, very sort of nondescript, whereas the males are very much different. So they're, as I say, they're smaller. They're also grey and white in colour, and they have black wingtips. So the males are very obvious when you see them. And both species, or both sexes as well, they have a white patch on the top of the tail. So it's a white rump is what we call it. So that's what gives their name, the ringtail.
Excellent. Okay. And you mentioned that they're rare. But I mean, how rare? Are we talking 10,000 pairs? Are we talking 10 pairs? Where are we?
So we're very much closer to 10 pairs than 10,000 pairs, unfortunately. So the latest national survey of hen harriers, which was conducted in 2015, well, the latest that we have results for, was the 2015 survey. And that put the population at around 108 to 157 breeding pairs. So they're definitely very few and far between. During the summer months, you'd find them in upland areas, whereas during the winter months, they'd be a lot more widespread throughout the country. So you'd find them both in upland areas and lowland, inland and lowland coastal areas. But yeah, they're very much a rare species now.
And do we get birds from elsewhere in winter?
We do, yeah. So there has been a small number of Scottish tagged hen harriers that have overwintered in Ireland. So we do have a small influx from nearby populations, but not that many, it seems. There have been some potential records as well of hen harriers leaving Ireland and going to the UK or going to Great Britain even. But again, it's only very small numbers of birds. So the vast majority of birds that we have in Ireland would be presumably Irish bred birds themselves.
Very good. And are they very long lived, or are they sort of only have a handful of years?
They're relatively short lived. So you're talking sort of 4, 5, 6 years, not much beyond that really. And the survival rate of hen harriers in their first year is quite low. So only around 17% of birds that are hatched in 1 year actually survive to the next year. So once they get beyond that year, though, their survival rate is much higher. And that's a fairly common trend in raptor populations.
Tell me this. So my understanding is that the research to date in the Britain and Ireland has been very, very much based around the breeding ecology of the hen harrier. And your PhD looked to flesh that out a bit more to see what, get a picture of what was happening throughout the year and away from the breeding site. So do you want to give us some insights there and maybe a summary of what your study involved and maybe some of the core findings?
Yeah, so my PhD was fairly wide ranging. We looked at both breeding season aspects of their ecology and wintering aspects of their ecology. So the breeding season aspects were mostly focused around forestry as a habitat for hen harriers, and more specifically looking at prey and predator abundance within young forest habitats, which hen harriers use. So that was the main breeding season aspect. And then the wintering season aspect was that we looked at winter hen harrier winter diet. And we also looked at hen harrier winter roost characteristics. And then across their entire annual cycle, we conducted a satellite tracking study. So we tagged nestling hen harriers, and we followed them for as long as they lived, essentially. So that gave us year-round insight into what they get up to, how far they disperse, their survival rates, the habitats they use when they're recruited into the breeding population. Yeah, we learned a lot from that satellite tracking study.
Did you come on any sort of major differences between the winter food sort of selection and the summer, or was it very much the same? That'll be interesting to know. And then I'm definitely interested to hear where those young hen harriers went. So you may hit that one next.
Well, so for the diet study, that was focused on their wintering diet. So we collected pellets which are the regurgitated fur and bone and feathers of the prey that they eat. So we collected those pellets from their winter roosts during the winter. It was two winters mostly that the pellets were collected from. And we collected pellets from 11 winter roosts in total throughout the country. So in total, I think we collected 1,117 pellets, which is a very nice representative sample size. So the results from that study showed that the diet of hen harriers in the winter seems to vary quite considerably across their wintering area. So for areas in the uplands where hen harriers winter, we tended to find more medium-sized birds and primarily snipe. Whereas for hen harriers in lowland and coastal areas, there were a higher proportion of small mammals and small passerines in the diet. So this is presumably very much linked to the habitats where the hen harriers hunt in these areas. And also the sex and the age of hen harriers which you get in these areas. So hen harriers in lowland coastal areas, they're mostly ringtails. So they're either juvenile birds or they're females or adult females. Whereas in upland areas, you tend to get a higher number of adult males. So the males, they're a lot smaller, so they're more agile and faster, and they're able to catch more agile and faster prey, such as snipe. So that may explain why we found a higher proportion of snipe in the diet in these upland areas, because you tend to get more male hen harriers in these areas. Whereas in lowland coastal areas, there is a much higher abundance of small mammals and small passerines, which are a lot slower and probably easier to catch. So that would suit younger hen harriers more so, and it would also suit adult female hen harriers more so as well. So that was a really interesting contrast in in the diet between these two wintering areas.
That's really interesting. I would have expected that it would have been the flip. So you would expect the larger birds to be able to hack it uphill in the uplands, sort of because it's colder and more brutal up there, and that the males would actually be driven down quicker than the ringtails and the females. So it's interesting that it's not the case.
Yeah, it's an interesting contrast, all right. Like you do still get ringtails, either juveniles or adult females in upland areas, but there tends to be more adult males in these areas.
Maybe is it prey availability that they just they sniper up the hills and that's where the males can catch them. So instead of competing with their potentially their offspring and their mates, they sort of switch places.
Yeah, it probably is linked to prey availability, but as well as that, there might be a bit of territorial behavior as well in play, whereby males kind of keep a loose territory around their breeding grounds during the winter. That's another potential reason, because the areas in the uplands where hen harriers winter are also where they nest during the summer months, or tend to be around the areas where they nest during the summer months.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So they get the early spake on that territory, then come the spring. That does make a lot of sense. Interesting. So then tracking. I mean, I think everyone loves a good map produced by a tracking study. So do tell us where the young... I presume you were ringing nestlings or tagging nestlings.
We were, yeah, we were. So between 2016 and 2019, we fitted satellite tags on 22 nestling hen harriers, across the country, really, mostly in the Mullagoraic Mountains, also in the Slieve Blooms, Ballyharras, Knockmeal Downs, those sorts of areas. So the results from that study were both very, very interesting, but also very confusing. It's a case of the more you learn about hen harriers, the less you know. So for the juveniles, they tend to undergo a very sudden dispersal movement in the vast majority of cases. So they'd fledge from the nest and they'd still be dependent on the adults for food for around 2 to 4 weeks after they actually fledge. So once they become fully independent, they leave the nest, and for example, on one day they might be at the nest, and the next day they could be 100 kilometers away from the nest. So it's very sudden and very long distance dispersal movement. So they have this sudden movement, and then they tend to establish kind of temporary settlement areas somewhere between 100 to 150 kilometers from the nest site. So they hang around in these areas for a couple of weeks, and normally they're prey-rich habitats, which of course makes perfect sense. And we found that quite a lot of these habitats were areas of arable farmland. And again, you tend to find quite high densities of small passerines and small mammals in these areas. So it's a perfect place for a young hen harrier to actually learn how to hunt, and to build up reserves needed to face into the harsh winter. So after that, then they tend to sort of in late October, they tend to move to their wintering areas. So for the birds that we followed that made it to that stage, the majority of them went to lowland coastal areas. Again, you know, you'd expect better weather conditions compared to upland areas, and again a higher abundance of prey, which would keep them ticking over during the winter months.
Two questions based off the back of what you just said. One is, you mentioned that they will hang out at sites of high prey density and availability and learn to hunt better or hone their skills or whatever. So this might be a silly question, but will there be a parent bird or other birds there for them to observe, or are they just sort of figuring it out themselves? Is it trial and error at that point, or are they still having their hand held?
No, it's not a silly question. It's a really good question, actually. I suppose we don't really know. Like, that would require observational studies in the field, and trying to find and trying to keep track of hen harriers at that time of year would be very difficult, because they wouldn't be as focused to one area. I'd imagine, though, that it's very much a case of every hen harrier for themselves. So, like, you would still get loose congregations of hen harriers in these areas, but whether or not they're learning still from other individuals around them, I'm not sure. It'll be a very interesting one to look at.
Yeah, totally, because like you know, one sort of guild of birds or whatever, they learn the songs basically from their dads, and they start learning it before they even hatch. And then there's another, like the wood pigeons, the ones with the very sort of, you know, singular, very, very straightforward songs, you know, even cuckoo. That's because cuckoo's parents don't hang around to teach them that song. They never meet their parents as such. So that's ingrained in their genetics that they know that. But I wonder if it's the same with harriers, or if they need to sort of be shown the way in terms of hunting.
Yeah, no, it's a really, really interesting one. Even the sudden movement, like, that must be pure instinct, that they know they need to go very far, and they know they need to go to lowland areas to find food. Like, you'd imagine that they're not following the adults, you know? So yeah, I'd say a lot of this behavior is just pure instinct, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I tend to probably agree. You also mentioned that, you mentioned if they have survived to that stage, which sort of what you were able, obviously, to track down most of the dead carcasses if you found them, because they were tagged, or get very close to them. And could you then ascertain the cause of death? Were most of them natural, or did you come across any sort of sinister foul play with any of those?
So most of the causes of death would have been natural, yeah. So there was quite a lot of, well, not quite a lot, but quite a few individuals that we came across had starved to death. So they had ended up in areas which wouldn't have been prey-rich habitats, kind of very intensively farmed landscapes, where a young hen harrier is definitely going to struggle to find any food. So there was a few cases of that. In some cases, we weren't able to determine a cause of death, either because we weren't actually able to find the carcass or because by the time we found the carcass, it was too far gone to be able to do a post-mortem. We didn't really come across any suspicious deaths. So there was one bird who was tagged in 2018, in the summer of 2018, and she survived her first winter until March of 2019. And one day we were checking her data and we noticed that she had stopped moving and that all the sensor data indicated that she had either dropped the tag or she was dead. So we went out straight away and it was a field in South Galway. So we arrived at the site and it was a field of wild bird cover, which is a really nice habitat, prey rich, lots of small mammals, lots of birds, perfect for hen harriers. But unfortunately, what we noticed straight away was that there was sowing thread strewn throughout the crop. So presumably the landowner had put this out fairly innocently, thinking that it would just deter corvids and pigeons. Unfortunately, though, what had actually happened was that the hen harrier was obviously hunting over the crop and it got its talons caught in the sowing thread and it became entangled and it died. So that was a very, very unfortunate way to go for that bird. And it kind of just showed as well just how random even a very rare bird can die. And yeah, it's something that we never would have expected to actually happen. But there you go. It just goes to show, you know.
Yeah, no, absolute freak accident. But when birds are at such a low population level, even those freak incidents are severe enough, you know.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. And we had another case as well whereby it was a bird that we tagged in 2017 up in North Cork. She spent her first winter in the south coast of Wexford and then she returned to North Kerry in the summer of 2018 and she had four chicks, but unfortunately that nest was predated just before they were about to fledge. So her first breeding attempt failed. Then she returned. She did the exact same sort of movement as she did in her first year and she ended up back at the south coast of County Wexford to overwinter again. But again, one day in early December 2018, we checked her data, noticed that it wasn't looking good. Sensors were flatlining. Her movement was in the same, or her position was in the same area. So again, we went out and in this case, we found that she had actually been predated, which is, yeah, for a top predator to be predated was quite unusual. But we suspect in that case, it was either a peregrine or a buzzard, which nabbed her, which was, yeah, just again, very, very unfortunate, but of course completely natural.
Yeah, absolutely. Crazy rare, but yeah, amazing. But amazing that you were able to get on that so quickly in both cases and figure out what was after happening. And look, there's learnings from both of those things, and it got certainly the first issue is complicated as conservation sort of, you know, learnings as well, which is great. So I suppose we talked a lot about their low density and population and stuff. So we now need to talk about their conservation or lack of or need for or whatever way you want to frame it. But tell us what the conservation issues are surrounding. Why are hen harriers at such a low? And you might give me your opinion or the facts on where, like in history, say we go back 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, where there was less pressures on our landscape. Like, would there be hundreds of thousands of hen harriers, or were they always sort of at a low density and very, very specialized in their habitat selection?
Yeah, so hen harriers, they were never, as far as we can tell anyway, they never would have been a very, very common bird. From what we know, back in the sort of late 19th and into the first half of the 20th century, hen harriers were actually nearly driven to extinction in Ireland. So they only kind of hung on in two areas, which were the Slieve Blooms and also along the County Waterford and Tipperary border. By the sort of 1950s, though, they were beginning to recover again, and it's thought that by the 1970s that the population was around 300 pairs. How accurate this is actually, though, it's hard to know, because survey effort then, how does it compare to survey effort in the most recent national surveys? It's hard to know. By the late 1970s, the population started to decline once again, though, and that continued through the 1980s and into the 90s. So their population over the years has very much fluctuated, and it's always been at a fairly low density and fairly low number. But certainly in recent years, since the start of the national surveys, which was in 1998, there have been five now since then. The most recent one, which we have information for, which is the 2015 national survey, and that showed the population was at around 108 to 157 breeding pairs, which compared to the 1970s estimate of 300 pairs is quite the decline. So between the 2010 and the 2015 survey, there was a further decline noted. So there was around a 15 to 16% decline in the numbers over that time period. And that's probably a fairly accurate representation of the population decline these days, because survey effort would have been relatively similar between those two surveys.
And I suppose then a good target would be to get back to 300 birds and then see where we are after that, if that could ever be achieved.
If it could ever be achieved, yeah. Yeah, they're definitely up against it, because they are facing an incredible number of pressures, both during the breeding season and during the wintering season. So a lot of the conservation work to date has focused on their breeding habitats. So hen harriers, they breed in upland areas, but these upland areas have been the focus of afforestation since the founding of the state, really, in the 1920s. So forest cover in Ireland back in the 1920s was around 1%. Today it's around 11%, and the vast majority of that forestry is commercial plantation. So you're talking Sitka spruce plantation. And a lot of that has occurred in these hen harrier upland breeding areas. So within the hen harrier special protection area network, the SPA network, the forest cover in these areas is over 50%. So hen harriers, they're an open habitat species. They don't occur in woodland. They don't occur in mature forestry. They have adapted somewhat to using commercial forestry, in that they can nest and hunt over forestry which is 3 to 15 years old, but it's a suboptimal habitat because it has it probably has less prey in terms of small passerines, and the availability of prey as well would be a lot more difficult for hen harriers to capture compared to open heather moorland, which is their traditional habitat. And also hen harriers nest within young forestry, but of course there's probably, well, from the research that I did during the PhD, there is a lot of predators in young forest habitats, pine marten, fox, stoat, mink, which wouldn't occur at such high levels in the historic habitat of open heather moorland. Wind energy and afforestation, two major pressures, and of course as well agricultural intensification of upland areas. So whereby in the past you would have had rough grassland fields, areas of scrub going up into the uplands, more and more now you're getting intensification of the farmland right up into upland areas. So hen harriers, they won't hunt over ryegrass fields because there is no prey in ryegrass fields. So again, this is reducing hunting habitat availability for hen harriers even further. And during the winter months as well, there is that reduction in hunting habitat availability, primarily with winter stubble. So winter stubble is an incredibly important habitat for, particularly for juvenile hen harriers in the winter months, because it's high availability of easy to catch prey. But there is a drive in recent years to reduce the amount of winter stubble in order to mitigate and reduce nitrates pollution in waterways. So that's just yet another pressure that hen harriers are facing. So they're really facing pressures from all sides and throughout their entire life cycle as well. So they're really up against it.
What about the efforts to counter some of this? I mean, have you seen any good examples? I mean, there's the Hen Harrier EIP, there was the Hen Harrier Threat Response Plan. I mean, are any of these efforts starting to kick in and make any difference at all, be it, you know, increase in numbers or even survival rates or what are you seeing out there?
Yeah, so the Hen Harrier project, that EIP, it's done some fantastic work within the SPA network, especially regarding farmland and increasing the availability of suitable habitats for hen harriers to forage and nest within farmland in the SPA network. But unfortunately, despite those efforts, there still is or has been a decline in the hen harrier population within the SPAs over the time period of that project. And I suppose that's just reflective of the fact that the main issue really in upland areas during the breeding season is forestry. There's so much forestry. Hen harriers are really struggling. They're struggling to produce chicks and they're struggling to fledge those chicks. Then the other aspect is the Hen Harrier Threat Response Plan. So that was started back in 2013 and it aimed to kind of outline the future conservation efforts of hen harriers in Ireland. But unfortunately, it still hasn't been published 10 years later. It hasn't been put out to public consultation yet. It is still work in progress and it will get published eventually, hopefully sooner rather than later. But yeah, that is still yet to be published.
Yeah, wow. Sure. I mean, that's you know, I know a lot of people have been involved in that, a lot of excellent conservationists and ornithologists. And yeah, I mean, look, if we're going to be serious about keeping hen harriers as a breeding species in this country, we need to get real. We need to get that published. And it has to be a working document. It can't live on a shelf somewhere in the minister's office. And I presume it's stuff like the forestry policy and our rush there to increase that and all the rest. And now there's pushback from the nature restoration law and all. So it's going to be an interesting few years and it's going to be a hot topic. And we'll see what break of the ball the hen harriers get from that and as these things, find their way.
Yeah, hopefully it's positive anyway. Hopefully it's positive. But yeah, there is a lot of pressures that they are facing. So we'll see what happens. But the sooner that actions are taken, the better, because the population is only going one way and that's not up.
Yeah, no, so Dr. Alan McCarty, on that very grim but knowledgeable and note.
Well, there's a man who knows what he's talking about. And you can hear the passion for the species that comes across there and the great work that's being done. I think what I take from that, though, Ricky, particularly is how intensive the effort needs to be to save these birds.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, look, we can't say it enough, but I mean, yeah, you keep saying it, but it's there is a lot of guys out there, a lot of organisations and efforts. I mean, you know, there's John Lusby, our own raptor officer, and Alan have been tipping away on raptors for so long and with some good wins in places with especially with barn owls and Merlin the same. But the hen harrier needs a whole sort of push. You know, the Irish Raptor Study Group, the various members have been tipping away at it. Some really, really good work in the MPWS. And again, the Golden Eagle Trust have been, you know, had their shoulder to the wheel for quite a long time. So the effort is there, but, you know, it needs to be from government. It needs to be from society. It needs to be from you know, local authority. Everyone, you know, no one can escape it. We have to really all pull together and collaborate and get it done. So it's you could be paralysed by it into sort of inaction, but there's certainly hope and the expertise are there, and I think it can be done.
I think that's it. I think that the way that I look at it is the hen harrier, you know, for all of its value in its own right, it's also a flagship for a wider habitat type for lots of other species that rely on exactly the same environment, which are less showy or less charismatic, but no less deserving of protection and conservation. So if we can save the hen harrier in Ireland, in doing that, we'll be saving so many other species of plant and animal, and that's really worth doing. I know there's been criticism sometimes in the past. I've seen it in the papers, like some funding given to hen harrier initiative, and people are saying, like, waste of money spending it on birds, like on one species of bird like that, as though what's been happening is, you know, a pit has been dug, the money's been thrown in and it's being buried. First of all, it needs to be recognised that money is paying for local employment in areas. That's really important. But not only that, it's not just protecting a hen harrier, it's protecting a whole suite of species that rely on the same habitat and environment.
No, you're 1,000% right there, and I won't even argue that. The bird of the week is important, and we're going to talk about another harrier.
Yeah.
Another cousin, and one I'm more familiar with than the ones we mentioned earlier, and that's the marsh harrier.
The marsh harrier, yes. And this again, it's becoming, well, maybe too early to say a success story in Ireland, but it is a species that is now nesting in our country again after an absence for a very long time. Only a couple of pairs, maybe, but they are back. It's quite different from the other harriers, even though it's closely related to the species we mentioned earlier, in terms of its habitat choice. Marsh harrier is a good name for them. They particularly love to be in areas with reed beds, and where they sort of quarter over the marshes and the reeds, and they like to prey on things, especially like moorhen and coot, ducks like teal, also frogs. They specialise in feeding on frogs. They have these sort of long dangling legs. They sort of plunge into the reeds and they drag these things out, and they their lives revolve around reeds. They build their nests out on these nesting platforms out in the middle of these spaces. One of the reasons why it's so hard to find marsh harrier nests, because they're usually in really inaccessible locations in the middle of big reed beds. Again, Tecumseh Lake, this mecca I was talking about earlier, this is prime habitat for them. It looks perfect. There's a few places in Fermanagh around the Loch Earn systems that are ideal for them as well. But as we see wetlands being restored, and if we can restore these reed beds and see birds like hen harrier coming back in, it bodes well for other reed bed species like bearded tits and reed warblers, and particularly the bittern, which is a species that relies on exactly the same type of habitat. I'd love to see that suite of species coming back in. And the increase in the numbers of these marsh harriers in Ireland, it I have to say, it does bode well. It's not all doom and gloom for our birds of prey.
No, it does. And let's do a rebed episode on all those things. Yeah. And I'd love to brag and tell loads of anecdotes about bitterns and marsh harriers. So give me that chance. But they're deadly. And I mean, they look a little bit different in that the males have kind of more blocks of colour than your typical harrier male, that are kind of, monotone, pale colour with the sort of black tips. They've kind of, and then the females are chocolate brown with these lovely cream heads, and really handsome.
Oh, they are, and again, you'd almost think they were two separate species. You know, they don't look alike at all. Very similar in structure, but very different in plumage. So the male, he does follow the general pattern of the other harriers we discussed in being largely grey with black in the wingtips, but he has lots of rusty red streaking on the chest and sometimes on the back too. It's quite variable in terms of plumage, but it looks quite different for the others. You wouldn't mistake it for the other harriers. You could easily confuse them. Montagu's harrier and a hen harrier and a pallid harrier and a northern harrier. You're not going to confuse the marsh harrier. It's quite different. And the female, as you said, is completely different from the other female harriers that we have. Chocolate brown, this lovely cream on the head, creamy patches on the wings too. Really unique bird.
Yeah, no, and they're marvellous. And and probably the most, the one that shows up the most other than hen harrier, obviously. And they're quite interesting in that the other thing as well that you'll always know they're harriers, they do the sky dancing, they do the food passes, all those sort of typical harrier traits, and really nice to see. So if you're up the mountain, if you're lucky enough up to Slieve Blooms or somewhere that has still got a breeding population of hen harriers, you can see the males. He'll fly over, he'll call the female from the nest, she'll sort of burst out of cover and go up to meet him, and they'll do all this screaming and screeching, and next minute she's on her back sort of in flight, and you're wondering what the hell is going on here, and they're kind of like locked in, their feet are locked, and he's actually passing her some food, and sometimes he'll like be more playful and he'll drop it and she'll sort of scoop it up midair, and it's quite sort of playful and flirty and all that sort of stuff. It's amazing to see, and they call that they do this whole sky dance thing where they're sort of playing off each other, and but marsh harriers do the very same thing over, it's probably a bit more dubious in that it's over sort of open water or reed bed often, and you're wondering is there going to be a crash, but they're just, it's flawless.
This is something you see with harriers around the world, because there are several different species of harrier throughout the whole planet. You get species in South America and Africa and Madagascar and some of the Indian and Pacific Ocean islands and even Australia. With there, you'll often see they have these very elaborate courtship rituals. So it's not something you necessarily associate with too many birds of prey, these sort of almost choreographed dances. But the harriers do it, and it seems to be strengthening the pair bond. It seems to be showing that they've got each other's backs, they can rely on each other. And by providing this food for the female, it's almost like a ritualistic way of showing, look, I can be counted on. I can find food for you and the chicks. This is what they're doing. So it's a way to reinforce that bond and to prove his worth. And it's really magic when you see it. And for the hen harrier, we actually have a video on the Bird of Charnel YouTube channel all about the sky dance and what goes on there. So do check that out. And something, if you're looking up at a reed bed, you might see marsh harriers doing this too. I really hope that the marsh harrier continues to increase. It's a species that if you go somewhere like the Netherlands, you've got lots of wetlands. It's actually quite a common bird there. You go to places like some of the wetlands and deltas you'd see in southern Europe. And again, it's quite abundant. And you can get them in parts of North Africa, around Morocco. You see a lot of them there too. So we know that, you know, given a chance, it's a species that can bounce back and do very, very well. And it's so unique in that kind of habitat. There's no bird of prey in Ireland other than that really exploits that niche. So there's a lot of vacant spaces for them in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's been a lot of raptor reintroductions in this country, as you well know, and we've spoken about in the past. And this is one that's going to get here on its own steam, really, yeah. if the habitats are right. And like one of my, I'm so sort of proud and delighted that there's a shot specimen in. It's a few hundred years old in the dead zoo in the Natural History Museum, and it's from Leash. And it's like, says to me, that's the evidence that they should be there, yeah. And that if we re-wet the bogs and the Phragmites reeds get in there and the coots start to sort of proliferate and plenty of food, we'll have marsh harriers hopefully in my lifetime, which would be just fabulous.
I think that's a species that will do really well from the re-wetting of these bogs and doing what we can. These very degraded habitats can still have major wildlife value if they're handled correctly, and we're starting to see the rewards from that work.
Deadly, yeah, no. So I think that's it from us. Lots of harrier talk there. I mean, get Google out, get Googling, get your Collins guide out and have a look at those species. And don't be hard on yourself if you can't immediately split the females and the juveniles. I definitely still can't, and I'd be familiar with a few of those. And very, very tricky. So it's not for your faint of heart.
And while you're Googling, actually, I'd recommend you check out probably my favourite bird in the whole world, which is a harrier. It's a bird called the Pied Harrier, and you find it in East Asia. So I've seen them in the wetlands around Vladivostok in the Russian Far East, where it's actually quite common. And the male Pied Harrier is the most beautiful creature on the planet, as far as I'm concerned. So just Google it, have a look what a male Pied Harrier looks like. It's just heart-stoppingly gorgeous.
And tune in next week for the episode on far-flung places Niall's been and the birds that live there.
Niall's travel name dropping. No, absolutely. So listen, thanks everyone for listening to us. Thanks for all the lovely feedback we get from you as well. It's really nice to know that people seem to be enjoying Ricky and I just prattling on and chatting. We'd be chatting about birds even if there's no microphones in front of us anyway. So it's nice that you're able to eavesdrop on our conversations. Don't forget to check out birdofsharland.ie. You can become a member. You can buy your bird food from our shops. If you're looking for binoculars and telescopes, you'll find them there. And you can also donate to help support our work to conserve hen harriers and other birds of prey, which is really important. And just to finish, as always, by saying In Your Nature is edited by Anne Marie Kelly, and the series is supported by Leash, Offaly and Westmeath County Councils and the Heritage Council.